As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a History of Egypt podcast interview. My guest today is Professor Nozomu Kawai. Nozomu Kawai is the Professor of Egyptology at Kanazawa University in Japan. He is also the director of the North Saqqara Project that excavates monuments in one of Egypt's most ancient cemeteries. Professor Kawai earned his PhD in 2005 from the Johns Hopkins University in the USA. His thesis was titled Studies in the Reign of Tutankhamun, and it did exactly that. Professor Kawai's research has been incredibly valuable to me working on this podcast, so you can imagine my excitement to speak with him and discuss some of these topics. The interview comes in two parts. Today, part one, we talk about some prominent individuals from the reign of Tutankhamun. The Lady Maya, his wet nurse and tutor, Senedjem, the king's teacher, Userhat, or Hatiai, a royal sculptor, and Tutankhamun's background, his family, and his origins. In part two, releasing in the future, we will discuss Ai, Horemheb, and those major officials. So, today is part one. I hope you enjoy. Our interview begins with some introductions and the context of Professor Kawai's work. Okay, so Professor Kawai, good morning and welcome to the History of Egypt podcast.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's really my pleasure to be interviewed. Yeah.
How are you this morning?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, in Japan, it's to the end of the spring. So, you know, the summer is starting from the next month.
Very good.
It's getting warmer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but not really terribly warm. Relatively comfortable.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you are in Kanazawa University at the moment. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
And how is life in your current town? Is everyone safe? Are they okay?
Yeah, the Kanazawa is located at the coast of the Japan Sea, you know, the opposite side of Japan. I mean, unlike Tokyo or Osaka, facing to the Korea and China. And during the World War II, this city was not exploded, I mean, bombed at all. So we have many historical monuments, temples and shrines. So, it's not like Kyoto, I mean, big historical town, but Kanazawa has a lot of places to visit. So I hope if you are interested in coming to Japan, I highly recommend to come here.
It sounds beautiful and probably very good for a historian to live in a town with many historic suburbs.
Sure, yeah. And this city is also famous for the gold. 90% of the gold leaf in Japan is produced in my town, the Kanazawa.
Wow.
So as I'm walking on the Tutankhamun, you know, the golden king, so, you know, I feel kind of connection.
Absolutely.
Between my research and the nature of the city.
So, Professor Kawai, for those who don't know you, one of your major research focuses is the reign of Tutankhamun and the people associated with him, not just the king, but the other people within his society. Mm-hmm. Now, as I currently understand it, you are working on a new book about the reign of Tutankhamun, which is a revised version of your PhD dissertation. Mm-hmm. So What kind of discussions can we expect from your book forthcoming?
Yeah, as you pointed out, the major originality of my book will be the discussion of the officials. Mm. I have more than 100 people listed in my book.
Wow.
Yeah. And as you know, the Tutankhamun did not leave many royal inscriptions, you know. We don't know much about his reign, although we know that there is a restoration stela he erected in front of Karnak Temple. But the reason why I looked at the official is to try to reconstruct his time by examining the careers of the officials. And actually, as everybody knows, Tutankhamun was kind of pivot. He had influential officials behind his throne, and they are actually controlling the country. So in order to reconstruct his reign, it's essential to look at those people's careers, especially in terms of the relationship between the king and them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that. So this is one of the uniqueness of my publication. But I also discussed many aspects of which has been already published. I mean, like the restoration and royal monuments. But recent to archaeological excavations or you know, epigraphic studies revealed more evidence. Like, you know, for example, in the Temple of Karnak, you know, there is a wall outside of the so-called Code of Cachet in between the in front of the seventh pylon,
right?
And the French Franco-Egyptian team revealed more blocks which were built during the time of Tutankhamun. So I integrate as many evidence as possible to try to understand the restoration of the temples all over Egypt, as well as his building project to refurbish traditional religion, especially centered on the cult of Amun. Yeah. So I'm not going to really discuss the foreign relationship during time of Tutankhamun, because I am not really, you know, specialized foreign relationships, especially because I don't read Akkadian, I mean, especially Amarna tablet, which is difficult, you know, not simple. So unless I can use the first evidence, you know, I thought, yeah, I should not really go into the detail. Of course, I have to refer to the, some result already proposed by many scholars, but this aspect, I'm not going to make any original argument.
Sure.
That's all about it. And of course, I discussed the tomb and the burial briefly.
Sure. So just to summarize, your book will focus on the influential people who really controlled the country under Tutankhamun, and the new evidence for his monuments, his records, his constructions, with mainly focusing on Egypt itself, not so much the foreign lands.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
That sounds very thorough already. So when can we anticipate the publication?
Yeah, I was expected to, I mean, the publisher company wants to publish the next year.
Okay.
The 100, centennial of the discovery of the tomb of Tutankhamun, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So next year will be the really big year for Egyptology, you know.
Sure.
Of course, the 200 years after the decipherment of Egyptian hieroglyphics as
well. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Good. That's exciting, though. I look forward to reading that because I've been using your unpublished PhD research a lot in the podcast and in my own personal academic research. So I'm excited to see your new or your updated perspectives and assessments. So
thank you very much.
Our next topic is Tutankhamun's background, specifically his family and his unidentified mother. As we've said, you have researched many aspects of this time period, and there is too much material to talk about generally. We can't cover everything. But very briefly, if you had to summarize your perspective on a couple of key questions, just in the basics, what is your current assessment of the evidence for Tutankhamun's family and background? Do you have an opinion on the likely identity of his parents or where he comes from? What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, maybe as you read my original dissertation, you understand my original thought, but since then, there are many, researches or examinations have been going on, and I have already changed my mind, but I can't give you the concrete argument about the parentage of Tutankhamun. If we believe that Tutankhamun's parents are the body of KB-55 and the so-called younger lady, who were found in the tomb of Amenhotep II, and Dr. Howarth suggested their, brothers, right? Brother-sister relationship. And many of scholars suggest Tutankhamun's father is possibly Akhenaten, but the problem is the age of the body of KB-55 is not as old as we can imagine. It belongs to Akhenaten, right? Rather younger male who passed away late 20s, something. So I don't know. I mean, it's really tough to make argument. As for the mother, at least we know she passed away before Tutankhamun ascended to the throne. I mean, there's no document. So someone who already passed away. I tend to incline now to think about Kia as a possible mother of Tutankhamun, if his father is Akhenaten, which we don't know yet. Yeah, because Nefertiti, according to the recent evidence from the graffiti of the one of the quarry, I don't remember the name of quarry, which was found near the Derusha, mentions her name is still on the inscription of the year 16 of reign of Akhenaten, very late. And even Aidan Dardason assumes that Nefertiti changed her name to Nefer-Nefer-Aten as queen, and she ruled 3 years as co-regent of Tutankhamun, which I don't believe, but that's his opinion. So if Nefertiti was still alive when Tutankhamun ascended to the throne, so she can't be the candidate if we believe the Aidan's assumption. Right.
Okay. So it is complicated and there's no answer.
No answer. But Kia is depicted many places as long as we see the Hermopolis block published by Günther Rader. The German expedition examined the Taratats, which were found in the Thoth temple in Hermopolis, right? And and he published a gigantic book, and also Hanke published a monograph about the Taratat from there. And Kia was pretty much, depicted. I don't know. I mean, she was probably extraordinary consort of Akhenaten. And Nick Reeves suggested, as we know, Nick believes she's a mother of Tutankhamun. Mm-hmm. So as one of the candidates, you know, I am still thinking, you know, as a possibility, if she was actually the mother and she disappeared and she can't be mentioned historical document at all. That's one of the reasons why his mother was never mentioned.
That makes sense.
And as we know, lock of hair of Queen T was found in the tomb of Tutankhamun, which suggests she was a grandmother, you know. So if Amenhotep III, if Akhenaten was his father, it's reasonable to believe, right?
Sure.
So
okay,
that's about it. What do you think?
There's no certainty, and like you, I think KV 55 is too young to be Akhenaten. But as for the mother, there are still multiple possible candidates, and we just don't have enough information yet. No. It is time for a quick break, and then the interview will return. See you in a moment.
The corporate world is like the ocean. It's alluring, but it's also full of deadly creatures that can shred you to pieces.
It becomes kind of like a Game of Thrones political arena where everyone's trying to murder you to get your job or your title.
As former corporate executives, we know firsthand that navigating corporate waters is not easy.
My family doesn't come from corporate background, so I didn't have any sort of guidance in that.
I wish people would be able to understand in this corporate world that talking about things that don't work or identifying problems does not mean you're a problem.
We'll dive deep into what happens behind fancy corporate doors or Zoom backgrounds or whatever.
Are they really performance improvement plans or just a legal tool to get rid of people?
I know a lot of people have been saved because of them.
We've created a show to help you navigate tricky corporate situations based on research and real-life experience.
I have really good advice. Don't go to a strip club with your team.
Listen to the Ambie Award-nominated podcast, Surfing Corporate.
Having discussed the family, we now talk about Maya, the wet nurse and tutor for King Tutankhamun. Maya is significant. I have told part of her story before. Now, Professor Kawai adds his views. Okay, so we don't hear about Tutankhamun's mother, but we do know about somebody who raised him like a mother, which is the royal menat Maya.
Yes.
So from your perspective, who is Maya? Where does she come from? And what role did she play in Tutankhamun's life?
I don't believe Aurangzeb's idea Maya was made to art. It's impossible to prove that again. But I admire his work. You know that he discovered and he published, you know, all the drawings from his time, and we actually rely on the result. You know. And as major officials of Tutankhamun were depicted on the wall of the vestibule of the tomb, and on both sides, you know, there are, I believe, 12 officials on both sides. Yeah, as you know, the depiction of Tutankhamun on the lap of Maya. On the left, you have the officials, you know, upper register and lower register, in total six. And as already Aran suggested, there's another depiction behind Maya. The six high officials are depicted in the same, you know, expressions. As I have examined high officials during the Tutankhamun's reign, you know, those are people who actually seized the power politically, you know, during his reign. It's really symbolical, Tutankhamun on the lap of Maya and worshipped or supported by high officials. This is an actual symbolical depiction of the time of Tutankhamun. And Maya was really influential, important lady as you read some of the inscriptions in her tomb. He even mentions he acted as Isis, the wife of Osiris, and she clearly mentioned she pacifies all gods of Egypt, which is impossible for the non-royal person, you know, in the history of ancient Egypt to mention such things, which is kind of royal prerogative, right? I mean, as you know, one of the name of the Tutankhamun, one of the royal name of Tutankhamun has a one who pacified the gods of the Turans, something like that. So clearly mentions the role of Tutankhamun, but in the name of Maya, which is amazing. Yeah, so she actually supported Tutankhamun's, you know, political role, you know, during his reign. This is kind of indication. But I don't know anything about the origin of Maya. But if you look at the, some inscriptions in her tomb, there are people who came from the Middle Egypt, like Hermopolis, someone who is associated with Thoth. But this cannot give you the exact location of the origin.
Yeah. Very good. Third, we have Senedjem, the royal tutor. Or maybe he had another name? Having studied this man and his tomb personally, Professor Kawai gives us the details.
There is also the male equivalent to Maya, whose name is a matter of debate. So I recently wrote an episode about this man, and I called him Senedjem, but you have argued differently. So what can you tell us about your understanding of Senedjem or his other name in Tutankhamun's life?
I visited the tomb in Akhmim when I was doing PhD research. And I also examined with my eyes to read the inscription. I don't find any writings of Senedjem.
Okay.
It's a Senket.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, and also the sarcophagus of Senket, which were used in Saqqara necropolis, you know, has no writing of Senedjem, you know, it's
okay.
Senket, same, and with the same title.
So, and just to clarify, you think the name is always Senked, no variation.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Yeah, this is my idea. And in the tomb of Senked, there is a depiction of Tutankhamun riding on the chariot. And there's a man shaven head standing beside Tutankhamun. And Boyo, he's my friend and he's a really respected scholar. But Boyo assumes the person standing next to Tutankhamun might be I. But I don't think so.
Okay.
This depiction is expressed in the center of the doorway. I mean,
right.
Like the tomb of Maya. The tomb owner supposed to express their role symbolically as Maya is holding Tutankhamun on her lap. So Senkedo wanted to express his role as a tutor of Tutankhamun who trained the king, you know, including the charioteer, right? So it's really unusual, the king is depicted with someone else, as you know, many other battle scenes from Ramside period or whatever. I mean, although it's not true, but king must be depicted only alone.
Always, yes.
Yeah, always. But I think this depiction of the reality, sort of reality, indicates the time of Tutankhamun. You know, more, I can say the officials can make some statement, sort of, although they are not royal, but they try to express their role, which probably reflects to the decline of the power of the kingship. Yeah. So I think that's himself, I mean, the guy who is standing next to Tutankhamun is Senkel himself, who wants to show he is the tutor, overseer of tutors of Tutankhamun.
That makes sense. Okay. Finally, we have the royal sculptor, Usirhat, or Hatiai, a man who worked for Tutankhamun and who might be the same person that built a house at Amarna, episode 115. This sculptor had an interesting career. Professor Kawai shares his insights. Okay, so, Professor, another individual who I've discussed on the podcast recently is a royal sculptor, and his name is Hatiai or Usirhat, depending on the context. In your assessment, is this the same Hatiai who worked for Akhenaten and had a house at Amarna?
That's right, yeah. And, you know, before I discuss this person, you know, there are many discussions already, like Jaap van Dyk or Haruk Willems, you know. And, so he was in Amarna, but obviously, according to the Stira, from Abydos now in the Leiden Museum, he was ordained to make a divine image of the traditional god. Yeah, so, I mean, when the policy of the kingship changed, it's not really easy to appoint a new person to make a, you know, a new sculptor, you know.
Sure.
So, as many of the high officials during the Akhenaten's reign continued to serve under Tutankhamun, even the sculptors served, you know, during Akhenaten continued to work for the king, you know, to meet their needs. So,
yeah. And we also see Hatiai in the tomb of Maya, who was, among other things, the overseer of all works of the king. So for some scholars, they suggest Maya was probably the man in charge of building the tomb of Tutankhamun. Do you think this Hatiai may have worked on it, or was he mainly statues?
Yeah, it's possible. He worked for the funerary equipment of the Tutankhamun tomb. But there are other sculptors and goldsmiths during Tutankhamun's reign, like Amenemhinet, or you know, whose tomb was found in the Teti Cemetery, the Teti Pyramid North Cemetery. Yeah. And Memphis was actually the center of the creation, I mean, the workshop.
Sure.
So, yeah. So those people and the Maya, you know,
making work together all of these things. Make,
all the divine statues, whatever, you know, for the royalty.
Okay. So, what was the role that Usirhat, I mean, sorry, Hatiai played in the restoration program? What was his contribution to the restoration?
I think his main contribution was to make new divine statues. You know, many of the statues were destroyed, as we know, especially in Thebes, right? Yeah. And also we have some physical evidence that some of the destroyed statues were restored. So I think, you know, he was important person to refurbish the important statues and temple decorations, whatever, you know, he was able to make.
Sure. Very good. This brings us to the end of part one of my interview with Professor Nozomu Kawai. As I mentioned earlier, part two will follow in the future. For now, it is time to wrap things up. If you would like to learn more about Professor Kawai and his work, you will find links in the episode description. I highly recommend seeking him out. Thank you for listening to this interview. I will see you soon. Take care, and may the gods bless you.
What did it take to survive an ancient siege?
Why was the cult of Dionysus behind so many slave revolts in ancient Rome?
What's the tragic history and mythology behind Japan's most haunted ancient forest?
We're Jen.
And Jenny.
From Ancient History Fangirl. Join us to explore ancient history and mythology from a fun, sometimes tipsy perspective.
Find us at ancienthistoryfangirl.com or wherever you get your podcasts.